Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast here on this fine Thursday morning, talking all things National Football League Week 10. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by the man who carries me on his back from the beginning of the preseason all the way until they crown a Super Bowl champion, Payne Insider. What's going on, my friend?
Here we go.
Another week.
Big week. Week 10.
Another week of living the dream, huh, baby?
Yeah. I mean, we got some hot, spicy nuggets today, I feel like.
Yeah, we'll have to try and at least spruce things up a little bit. As always, Thursday? Monday Night Football recap, a little contest update for you as well, our weekly visit with the one Dave Mason, and of course, Thursday Night Football big game breakdown brought to you by the American Sports Betting Coalition between the Seahawks and Cardinals. But Payne, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because I don't think we should have to relive what the debacle we saw Monday night, but what were your main takeaways from watching the Detroit Lions go into Lambeau, win for the second time, and Brett Hundley looking like he was ill-equipped to handle an NFL offense?
What could they be?
I mean,
I'd rather have you evaluate this.
I mean, Mike McCarthy said Hundley wasn't the problem, and to his credit, the defense did not force a single punt in that football game.
So there's, I mean, we can use this as part of our handicap for one of the games we're going to talk about later in the show, obviously. But, you know, Brett Hundley isn't that guy. And I, you know, tried to warn folks of that. Hopefully they listened. And when you look at what Aaron Rodgers does for this team, it's clearly he's the most valuable quarterback in the league. And I'm taking this one step further. He's never, ever going to eclipse Tom Brady with the Super Bowls. That's just going to be impossible. But he is the most talented. He is the best quarterback the NFL has ever seen. And it's evident by watching this team perform now. They don't have a defense to rely on. So I don't know where the stops are going to come from. And you don't have a quarterback that can move the ball.
It's a very good point. It's the system.
Two weeks to prepare. Did you see what they did?
Hey, 14 plays to go like 52 yards to get a field goal blocked by Mason Crosby.
And I texted you and said what?
What'd you say?
And I texted you after that and said what?
This game's over if that's the best thing that they can do with 2 weeks to prepare.
So they rolled out a script that they prepared for 2 weeks and it resulted in 0 points. At that point, the game was over. If that's what you could come up with after 2 weeks. And you know, I don't know. Listen, I'm not sitting here playing, you know, coach. That's not me. I'm not, you know, I do have some X's and O's in the arsenal, but because I you know, talk to a lot of sharp guys.
John Gruden, quarterback camp, baby. Payne Insider is going to provide the shared analysis.
But the point is, everything was a dink and dunk. Everything was in front. They took zero shots. And then, you know, you start to bash Mike McCarthy for that. And then you see some of the shots that Hundley's missing. Obviously, fresh on the internet, everyone's posting Jordy Nelson streaking wide open into the end zone through the hash, and he doesn't spot him. He's staring right at him, and now it's a pass that's about 15 or 20 yards down the field. So if Hundley can't make that pass, complete that pass, see that pass, I understand, you know, why we saw a lot of the dinking and dunking early. This is an offense that's not very good. I'm trying to tell people, right? There's one guy that can run this system. That's it. And Mike McCarthy is going to be selling flowers on the side of the road a year after Aaron Rodgers retires.
At least they're very nice to their flower salesman on the side of the road in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
This is not a good system. This is not a good scheme. We're seeing it. And I've said this. Ben McAdoo's out the door. See ya. Gone. Joe Philbin, I don't know what he's doing. And, you know, gone. Like, this system is not very good unless you have Aaron Rodgers running it. And there's only been one Aaron Rodgers ever.
It can mask a lot of deficiencies when you have a generational talent. And I know some of our listeners were tweeting back, Payne's been saying it forever. This offense and this roster sucks without Rodgers. And sure enough, we saw it again on display on Monday night. We'll see if we see a similar Green Bay looking offense again on Sunday when they take on the Chicago Bears. Football free roll, Payne. We had another weekly winner. Want to share that fine young lad's name and credentials?
At the two Jakes. At the number two Jakes. After speaking with him, I found out there's only one Jake, though.
So but, he didn't violate the rules. It's not like a collaboration of picks between Jake 1 and Jake 2.
Right. Just okay. One Jake. He is the winner. So congrats to him. Week 9 winner. Keep submitting those picks. Lots of great weekly prizes, swag, gift cards, things of that nature. So if you're out of the running, you can still win a lot of weekly prizes. And right now, the top is quite crammed, man.
What is our leader in the clubhouse have? What's his
I knew you were going to ask that when I went that way. I shouldn't have done that. I don't know. Do you need me to log in right now?
No, you don't have to log in right now. We'll bring that up, but we will start to mention those names atop the leaderboard as we get deeper into the season.
I tried to mention it a couple weeks ago. You told me I wasn't allowed to.
No, you can't mention. You can't mention some of those clowns on the air. They know that.
No. Oh, okay.
They have to actually produce for 17 weeks. You know, you don't win a Super Bowl at the midseason break.
There you go.
I mean, that's kind of how it works there. All right, let's get into some of the games. We have a busy slate on tap.
I had to look. 32.
32?
There's two guys tied at 32.
32 and 13. That's
their
record.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then six guys tied at 31, and then there's like a full screen of guys at 30. This thing's wide open.
Yeah, apparently our contest entrants are sharper than we are this season, so we have to get some of them on the podcast. They can fill in when we take our bye week.
32 and 13 would be certainly nice at this point.
Oh, if I was 32 and 13, I'm not showing up for work. I'm not going to lie. You know, you're hosting this thing. You and Dave Mason are hosting the whole thing from start to finish.
Oh, that would be great. It'd be a lot of Rachel Ray. What else are we talking about?
The chick on the Price is Right. I mean, I don't know what kind of off the rails kind of shenanigans and shit show it would become.
Yesterday, they had a blonde chick on there. That was...
On the Price is Right you're referring to right now?
Yes. And I don't know. It's got to be the same one if he sent the DM saying, check out this broad on the Price is Right.
Jesus.
She was smoking.
People are going to go back and they'll be like, I thought you guys crunch numbers all day and you claim to be as working this hard. And here you two jack-o'-lanterns are watching, you know, fucking Price is Right early in the morning.
It's on in the background on mute.
Yeah.
But yes.
Mute my ass. Mute my ass. Vikings, Redskins. Number of this game, Payne, Vikings, 1.5-point favorites at betonline.ag. Total on this lovely affair in the nation's capital, 42.5. These two teams met a season ago with Washington winning the game 26-20. Pretty sure I had a bet on the Vikings there and watched Sam Bradford stumble his way into a non-cover. How do we begin to assess where the Vikings are coming out of the bye week? And is this an opportunity where you're either still buying low on the skins or the market is caught up on the heels of their big win last weekend in Seattle?
When you talk about the Vikings, I know through some reading this week, they treated the bye week like a camp, you know? It was much different than last year. If you remember, they went into their bye 5-0 last year, then dropped like 4 straight and then missed the playoffs. Zimmer has been pounding that home this week that the bye is not a vacation. You know, they're 6-2. They can't throw this away. They can't throw the division lead away, all that stuff. So I think we're going to see a prepared team here. Obviously, we know what his defense brings to the table. If the offensive line is still banged up for the Skins, that front is going to have a field day. Now, Everson Griffin hasn't practiced yet this week. He's got a sack in every football game this year. He's got 10 total sacks. So if he can't go, that's obviously a huge blow to that Vikings defensive line. You're going to want to monitor that. He's a tough guy, but monitor that situation. But the defense, again, is just lights out for the Vikings right now. They haven't allowed more than 20 points since week 2 at Pittsburgh. And if you remember that, that was a transitional week, right? They went from Bradford to Keenum. It was a short week. So defense has been lights out at this point. So,
What do you make of the Redskins right now? I mean, they haven't shown an ability to run the football. I mean, I looked at it. I mean, they haven't had a single running back go for more than 50 yards since their week 2 win at the Rams. I mean, if they're one-dimensional here with some of those offensive line concerns, this thing just snowball on them, even with Case Keenum leaning the offense on the other side of the ball for the Vikes?
You know, I know statistically the Redskins weren't very good last week, but, and I'm not going to take full credit for this because obviously I didn't play the Redskins, so I won't pat myself on the back. But again, at some point, this is a market. The market's going to not only factor in all these injuries, but it's probably going to overaccount for them. And we saw that last week. The defense really showed up. They started to get some guys healthier on that side of the ball. Quietly, the Redskins are starting to get healthier. Of the 14 guys that are on the injury report this week, 11 of them were at least limited participants at practice yesterday. You're going to want to monitor that closely, obviously. There's a core of these guys that are limited, that are trying to work their way back. So that's going to be a huge addition, obviously. Vikings obviously have some revenge here. We know what this means coming out of the bye week. They've been talking about it all week. We have seen some sharp money initially on the week in Washington. I'm not going to be able to play them straight. Maybe you could convince me into teasing them through the 3 and the 7. It is the professional side. I can't do it quite yet. I'm not sure what the Vikings are, though. But I started to dig into this. And I know there's a lot of talk about Teddy Bridgewater like coming back and saving the season. What am I missing there?
In terms of Teddy being the saving grace, or, you know, in terms of the productivity that they're not getting, at least in the eyes of the general public, from Case Keenum?
That's where you hit it. The general public. So I dug into this, and you always want to be fair, obviously. So we removed the week one metrics where Sam Bradford chopped up the Saints defense on Monday night. With Case Keenum since week two, the Vikings' sixth best in passing success rate. Keenum right now has the second highest passer rating under pressure in the NFL. I'm not sure you could even fathom going to Bridgewater here unless, you know, Case suddenly turns into Osweiler Jr. overnight. He's done a pretty good job.
I mean, especially this time of year, if you were to make the move to Teddy, I mean, this is going to define the Vikings season. I mean, not only do they play the Skins this weekend, as we know what the number is there, home date against the Rams, they go to the Lions on Thanksgiving and then go on the road to Atlanta. I can't imagine a scenario, unless Case is that bad for an extended stretch, we're going to Teddy Bridgewater and Zimmer's going, you know what? I'm going to put a quarterback on the field who hasn't played in a year plus and have put all of my playoff hopes and dreams and aspirations on his back. I just don't see that scenario, despite what people are saying and, you know, reading into Teddy Bridgewater being the guy to make the Vikings from contender to full-on pretender to contender, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, great kid. Listen, like, South Florida guy, great kid, worked his way back. This is a situation where I don't think people have any idea how close it was. Thank God, you know, they had medical staff basically sitting there at the field, or else Teddy Bridgewater would have lost his leg. So I get it. The story's awesome. He's battled back. He's a good kid. You want to see him do well. But you look at, like, Twitter, you look at social media, you look at the beat writers, they're all calling for Teddy Bridgewater here. It's kind of wild to me.
Yeah, Teddy will get a shot. I don't think it'll come anytime soon, though, if we're going on record here, especially in this particular spot. Knowing how good this Vikings defense is, all you need is someone that won't turn the ball over under center. Green Bay and Chicago, you made mention of this game briefly when we talked about the Monday Night Football recap. The Bears have ballooned out to a 5.5-point home favorite in this matchup. Total 38 at betonline.ag. And I'm not going to say I went back into my time machine to figure it out, but I looked over the last 10 games. The Bears have not been favored against the Packers during that stretch. I know that was Aaron Rodgers, so it's a little bit different. But man, this number, Payne, feels like the books had to do a full-on knee-jerk reaction to the 3 that we expected to see had Brett Hundley actually look competent against the Lions.
3 was the look ahead. Now 5.5, 6 after it opened 4.5. I don't know where this line goes. To me, without looking at the bet splits, this line tells me a lot.
Until you find out that 80% of the folks are going to be on the Bears when we get Dave to shoot us a note on Sunday morning.
Man, that's surprising to me. I get it. He looked horrible on Monday night. And I'm kind of the same mindset, because I've been so adamant about what this Packers team is, about what this Packers offense is without him. I don't know if you can quantify it. Like, if you can't be successful at home with 2 weeks to prepare against a middling Lions defense, I don't know how you're going to fare against the Bears defense, who's had 2 weeks to prepare. You're on the road. It's a short week. I don't know where we're going to see this massive improvement for Hundley. Now, the other side of that coin is I completely understand. We were talking about the Bears winning some games they probably shouldn't, with a lot of key turnovers, 14-point swing kind of turnovers. You know, when you're talking about a total at 38, and you're talking about, you know, Trubisky running an offense that since he started is averaging 4.5 yards per play offensively, it's tough to say, hey, I'm going to go lay 6. This does have a feeling of the Bears, who have been, you know, kind of beat up in this series, I would say little brother, and you're seeing this Packers team that's kind of limping around, probably the spot or the best spot where you're going to be able to attack and have some success here. In terms of Trubisky, these are the other things that you have to be able to gauge. What does it look like off the bye week, right? This is a young kid. He didn't get starts coming into the season, was sharing reps before the season, in camp, in preseason. He wasn't going to be the guy. Now he's getting all the reps. And I don't want to make this comparison because I don't think he looks like Deshaun Watson, but we saw, what did Deshaun Watson look like off his bye? That is a big bye week for a rookie quarterback. Not only that, they're going to be able to implement some things that nobody's seen on film yet. And so that's an advantage that's probably not factored into this number. So I do think there is a little bit of an advantage. I think there's some things that we haven't seen yet, some new wrinkles from this Bears offense that haven't been put on film. And you look at Green Bay's secondary right now, allowing 51% of passes to great successful. So I know there's not a lot of great weapons, but Trubisky should have some success here when he throws. What does Inman look like? I liked Inman. I know they brought him over. They traded him for the 7th-round pick from the Chargers. Didn't play the first week, but now he's got to buy 2 weeks to learn the system. I think he can help. I like him.
I mean, they need something. There's nobody out there in a deep threat, and you're putting Mitchell Trubisky as a young quarterback that has a ground game he can lean on with Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard, but no real weapons to try and stretch the field. To temper some of that Bears enthusiasm pain, I will say the Bears have been favored in 5 games over the last 3 years. You know what their record is in those 5 games?
Do tell me, sir.
0-5 straight up, 0-5 against the spread. So little to say the Bears have not thrived in games they're supposed to win. It hasn't happened often. But it'd be an interesting matchup, as you allude to, a chance for the Bears to get a little bit of revenge against their hated divisional rivals, and a game where they actually outgained Green Bay earlier this season, were just done in by turnovers and the Packers executing in the red zone, ultimately leading to Mike Glennon's benching and the start of the Mitchell Trubisky era at Soldier Field. From a game where you should have weather in the forecast in Chicago to Northern Florida, the hotbed of the National Football League, where Jacksonville will at least attempt to continue to keep this train on the tracks as 3.5-point home favorites against the Los Angeles Chargers. Total on this game of 41 at betonline.ag. This is only the 11th time these teams have played since 2003. The Jaguars favored on November 18th back in 2007, so unfamiliar territory for them when you're talking about these teams. But Payne, I know what kind of the number indicates here. We know where we've seen a little bit of professional money. We'll get Dave's take on this game if he's seen the same thing as well when we talk to him later. But from an X's and O's standpoint, it seems like the Jags would have an advantage in most of the key positions.
And we can spend some time on this game because I think, to me, the most intriguing game of the week, and you've hit on it and the market shows it. Chargers +4.5, +4 are big positions from the sharpest of the sharp this week. The matchup is abysmal for the Chargers. And you know, we've been talking about this for months, and now it's starting to get some traction in mainstream media. How do you beat the Jaguars? You have to run the ball. You have to get out ahead. The Chargers are 30th in the NFL with only 34% of runs grading successful. The offensive line just isn't getting any push up front. They're 28th. An adjusted line yard. So I'm not sure where that's going to come from. Obviously, with the Chargers 2 weeks to prepare for this, you would think they've worked on some things trying to establish Melvin Gordon. I know he's been dinged up, battling a couple minor injuries here and there. The bye week probably did well. The Chargers are going to have to establish a ground game here. That is their only shot in this one. I don't know where we want to go from here. Breaking down this game, I'll let you lead us. But I think there's just a lot to unpack here.
I mean, the Chargers' biggest weakness defensively has been stopping opposing ground games. You're going to most likely get a pissed off Leonard Fournette, who's got an extra week to think about not showing up to team events on time. What do the Chargers need to do, in your opinion, defensively to try and at least slow down Jacksonville and force Bortles to beat them with his arm?
Well, you know, you do get linebacker Denzel Perryman. He returns this week for Los Angeles. He's been practicing in full the last 3 weeks. He's going to be, much needed help to shore up this leaky Chargers run defense. Right now, 25th in rush success rate defense. And as you alluded to, we know Fournette likely comes out pissed off after being suspended. I also think when the dust settles, right, Jacksonville won last week with no Fournette playing. Long term, I think Fournette sitting out that game with as high as his workload has been might actually be a blessing in disguise there. So he's going to be fully healthy for this stretch run. And my mind is wandering right now. Not to get off topic, have you seen this Jacksonville schedule after this week?
I know their next three opponents. I don't know much beyond that. Cleveland. On the road at the Browns, where they'll be about a touchdown favorite. On the road at Arizona, we don't know what the Cardinals are. And then home against the division rival Indianapolis Colts. So things, at least for the next trio of games after this Sunday, set up quite favorably.
Cleveland, Arizona, Indy, Houston, San Francisco. This is, I can't believe I'm going to say this, this is going to be a 10-win Jacksonville team.
I mean, Jacksonville, to their credit, has been so bad for so long, they have at least earned the last place schedule that they've had placed in front of them this season.
Yeah. This is a wild game to me. You know, when it comes to Bortles, I know you mentioned that a little bit. I've been whispering this because I didn't want it, you know, to get passed around. Blake Bortles is doing better of late.
No one's listening to the podcast. They're not going to share our information anywhere else.
You know, Marone and the offensive coordinator there, Hackett, they've done a good job tailoring first down throws, you know, when the defense is playing run, and they have to respect the run, obviously, the way Jacksonville's running it. But a lot of rollouts where Bortles can use his mobility. And he only has one read, which is a positive, right? He's only got to read half the field. It's simply take off if there's room with your feet, throw if there's an open guy, and throw high or throw out of bounds if no one's open. It's very basic. But this is going to shock people. Quietly, the Jaguars 9th in passing success rate. And Bortles is grading out right now as an average quarterback. You know, if you're the Chargers, again, you got to establish the ground game. You have to find a ground game that you haven't had all season. That's the only way you can beat Jacksonville. I know Darius played 12 snaps last week, had the three stops. If he can get his head on right, and we've seen, he plays a little bit more passionate for Doug Marone. If he can help improve this Jacksonville unit from like one of the worst run defenses to even below average, I mean, that's a massive upgrade. Man, I don't know. Here's the other interesting thing to this game. In our Monday recap of the Bengals, it kind of, again, we keep leading this to the Jacksonville Jaguars. We kind of refreshed, again, everyone's memory on how to beat this Jacksonville team. So we know the Chargers can't run. Maybe, again, they've worked some things out during the bye. You know, when you look at this game, Jacksonville's a team that likes to get out, and that's the key. You look at the Chargers, this is a team right now, 25th in the league in first quarter scoring. And I know we always talk about this early trip across the coast, and it's overvalued, but this certainly isn't like a benefit now, right? We've gotten to a point where certainly it's more than incorporated in the line. We're not going to start thinking like, you know, this West Coast team traveling east for the early start's a positive. So can they get out in front, right? This is a Chargers team that we've seen all season has trouble scoring early on in games. It's tough. I don't see a matchup here. The only way this works for the Chargers is if they figured something out during the bye week, Melvin Gordon's 100%, and they can get some semblance of a ground game. Because if you think you're going to run on first down and not be successful and then have Phillip Rivers pass on 3rd and 7 all game, and have him bail you out against this pass rush of Jacksonville, against this secondary of Jacksonville, it's not going to happen.
Shallow crosses, Keenan Allen all day, buddy. Shallow crosses, Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Chargers go bonkers.
There you go.
Yeah. Fun fact, it's absolutely useless pain for the handicap of this game. The Chargers, since 1993, have played 32 games against teams currently residing in the AFC South, 28-4. Against the spread in those matchups. I'm not even sure who the hell the quarterback was. Maybe Stan Humphries back in 1993. So it's useless for this week. Still fun
this
to talk
good.
About. 4-1 against the spread and straight up against the AFC South the last 3 years. So
everyone is starting to call me nice. Can I be an ass here?
Yeah, you can be an ass here. I mean, you're an ass to me all the time. It doesn't hurt my feelings. I've grown thick skin.
You should,
and
over
4 years.
You should get more sleep if this is what you're not sleeping for.
I'm trying to dig up some of these nuggets, all right? I had to entertain one of our finer college football podcast guests last evening, so it cut into my sleep schedule.
Oh, who was it?
So we took Dusty out here calling the UNLV BYU game on Friday night. You know, he comes into my town, much like you do when folks roll into Miami. You have to, you take good care of your people.
There you go.
But it what, was not
were
a
were you out all
evening.
Night?
No,
nice
no,
women?
It wasn't one of those nights. It wasn't a nightclub evening or anything like that. Dusty didn't come in saying he wanted to go to Omni or Hakkasan, so was able to dodge that bullet.
I got you. There you go.
So a little bit better. We know that doesn't kind of take place during football season, so we have to try and avoid that. All right. This is a game I was actually shocked. I mean, because we trade notes and kind of to give people a little glimpse behind the curtain. We go back and forth. I pick a lot of the college football games, NFL. You send me kind of notes where games you want to focus on. And I was relatively surprised, to say the least, that this game made the cut this week. But we're going to talk about it anyways, and it's the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, we can ditch it because I only had 7 on the card, and I said Todd's going to be upset because I didn't put an 8th game on there.
Well, I mean, you prep for this game, so I don't want to spend. We don't have to spend a lot of time
really,
on it. But if
I
you
didn't
have
really hot, prep. There's not much prep going on.
Oh,
this is
go.
Kind of, here we go. It's out there.
If you had
it's
hot
mentally
steamy
ingrained.
Nuggets on this,
it's
I wanted
10.
You to be able to drop them on our audience's head.
Oh, okay.
So Titans 4.5-point favorites, total 40.5 at betonline.ag. This game being played in Nashville. Let's see what you have here with these two teams struggling to find an identity, in my opinion.
You know, we hate the Bengals, obviously.
Fact.
But when you start to take a gander at this line, there's some perception in it. Open 5.5. That's higher than the closing number when the Bengals went on the road to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, who we power rate the number one team in the league. It's roughly the same as the close last week at Jacksonville without Fournette. So, I mean, I don't know. This has to be the spot, right? If I'm not going to bet the Bengals. I can't do that. They're bad. But if ever there were
a spot. Why does
this
have to be a spot for the Bengals? This team looks like they might be as cashed out as the New York Giants at this juncture of the season, no?
Well, I'm not sure what Tennessee is either right now.
That's
Man,
a very
I wish,
fair
I wish,
assessment.
When I talked about my buy low team a couple, like, what was that, Monday?
Yeah. Have you shorted the stock already?
I would love to have switched that to Jacksonville.
Too late. The market's already taken off on that.
Is Jackson, it's at about 11% increase like Bitcoin. Is Jacksonville going to... Man, I can't even say those words. Do they have a shot to win the Super Bowl?
Oh, let's stop. Stop, 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 stop.
Okay.
I thought you were going to just tell me win the division. I didn't think you were telling me
win
the Super Bowl.
Oh, they're going to win the division. They're going to win the division.
I mean, you can get him at even money right now, so we should go out and bet him then. Stop the podcast, go out and bet him.
There you go. All right, so to my eye, Mariota is getting healthier, but he doesn't appear 100% yet. He's still not moving around how I would like to see him. Last week, I feel like that was a cry for help from AJ Green.
He lashed out like a small child in elementary school.
He is beloved in that locker room. You saw teammates come to his aid. They have talked all week about getting AJ Green the ball. And when the Bengals do that, they're competitive. They win. And that's where you can exploit this Tennessee defense. 24th in defensive pass success rate. There's going to be some opportunities there. They also are having issues running the ball. They're certainly not going to be like, you know, one of the best running teams in the league. But you can run on the Titans. You can at least do some things with Mixon to get him more involved. I know they've trying to do that. But you can do some things where if you can pull off 3-4 yards of carry, the Titans are going to have to respect it. Man, are the Bengals bad.
All right, should we just stop on this
game?
And
I can't do it. I'm going down a path that I don't want to be doing.
I mean,
right,
you've
so,
got,
I mean
gone
that, that's going
to
be the side.
This path has taken us to dark places because I believe you just said the Jacksonville Jaguars are a viable Super Bowl contender. Now, I agree with their defense, but man, if they get through Pittsburgh and New England in the AFC, I might have to retire from football.
Well, they've already gotten through Pittsburgh once. What's
they,
to say
they did
they
get through
again?
Pittsburgh? That was in at Heinz Field. So you're right there. So. All right, maybe go out and buy those.
I mean, if Darius gets his head going, and they can stop the run a little bit, that's a scary team. Are they the most talented team in football?
Defensively, there's not a doubt in my mind that they're the most talented team in football. I think the Steelers are still more talented, in my opinion.
Okay,
but defensively, from one unit, if you're looking for one unit, whether it be a defense or offense, the Jaguars' defense is the most talented unit in terms of bang for your buck, in my opinion. When you look at that roster from top to bottom on that side of the ball,
it's scary.
Me and Ava.
And they've all taken on the attitude of Jalen Ramsey. What do you know?
I will say, I'll give Jalen Ramsey some props. His comments were pretty damn funny when they interviewed him after AJ Green. I just told him he was soft. I told him he wasn't getting open. I saw the frustration coming through.
Florida State guys have no problem telling someone they're soft.
Apparently. We heard Deion Sanders lash out at Tony Romo. So.
That was pretty funny. That was good. I mean, I think he had to, right?
Well, I mean, it's good to see Deion not tackling on the field, that he wanted to tackle the off-field issues.
He always went low. He wasn't a bad tackler.
Yeah. He was a worm burner. If this was baseball, he'd be a worm burner. He was diving into the turf more to cover himself, like he was trying to dodge a mortar shell.
Man, are there some good Deion stories.
Yeah. I'm not sure which ones you can tell. We have to have a little storytelling expose from you, knowing a lot more of that stuff than I do.
Here we go. On to the next.
All right. New Orleans at Buffalo. New Orleans, a three-point road favorite in this particular spot. Total 46.5 at betonline.ag. Only the eighth meeting between these two teams since 1989. New Orleans comes in fresh off of their sixth straight win and sixth straight cover. The last time we saw the Buffalo Bills, they were getting bitch slapped around in the trenches by the New York Football Jets last Thursday night.
Yeah.
All right, so we're done with this game too, is what you're saying?
No, if you're paying close attention, this is a different Saints offense, you know? Yes, when they pass, it's extremely efficient. New Orleans still number one in passing success rate, but they can run the ball this year. Fifth in rushing success rate, tied for seventh yards per rush attempt, and more importantly, the Saints offensive line, number one in the NFL in adjusted line yards. And, you know, just to talk about this a little bit, it's a measure of how much each running play on a yards basis the offensive line gets credit for, right? Like, you know, we all remember Barry Sanders, obviously, back in the day, he'd get hit 3 yards in the backfield, then pick up 38 after breaking like 9 tackles and a legendary spin move in between. The offensive line doesn't get credit for that. You know, a running back runs up the middle and he's not touched for 5 yards. Offensive lines get credit for that. So adjusted line yards is a measure of like how much credit the O-line gets for rushing yards gained. Saints number one in the NFL. And, you know, my point to all this is, and we'll have a good test here, right? It's going to be 40 degrees at kickoff in Buffalo. There isn't going to be a lot of wind. There's no rain. Like, there's been worse November games in Buffalo for sure. But maybe like the 2017 Saints are being stereotyped, right? We've thought for years, dome team, high-flying passing offense. When they go outdoors, you know, additionally, like outdoors with potential elements, that's a massive hindrance to this New Orleans offense. I'm not sure how much of a hindrance it is this year. We're going to find out here, right? This will be a decent test. It's not going to be, you know, a blizzard out there. But we'll find out what they look like in some chillier weather with their approach of running the ball.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, I just worry when you look at this kind of handicap, and I have a feeling where some of the math guys may come in on this one, Payne, but you're almost buying the Saints at the top of the market. I think, yep. You know, you're going to see what we would expect with a hot team probably getting, you know what, if you figure 70% of the action in this particular spot. You look at the Bills, and I know we've been detractors for what they've done. Upcoming schedule for them after playing host to the Saints, on the road at the Chargers, on the road at the Chiefs, home against the Patriots. So the honeymoon for the young head coach may come to a crashing halt sooner rather than later.
There's advantages here for Buffalo, without question. This is one of those games, right? The total is going to continue to tick down. The market still isn't realizing that the Saints defense is improved or how they're playing. Again, when they pass, more efficient, but this isn't just like Drew Brees chucking and ducking. They have a real ground game. But Buffalo is going to have an advantage here. They should be a heavy dose of Shady McCoy. That's how you're going to beat the Saints. Just ground and pound. The Saints defense allows 50% of runs to great successful. That's 27th in the NFL. So it has to be a ton of Shady McCoy here. You know, when you the math guys, again, are going to gravitate towards the Saints. This feels like, with the total coming down, a spot where if you'd grabbed Saints money line early and you're able to take Buffalo on a cheap buy plus 3.5, I mean, there's a huge edge there. That's what this would feel like to me. You know, we always hit on Buffalo, and right, the metrics are really bad. You look at adjusted net yards per play. New Orleans is like nearly a positive point. The Bills are nearly negative yards, negative 1 yards in the adjusted net yards per play. So there's a huge difference there. We've been talking about Buffalo living and dying on the turnover, still number one in the NFL, plus 11 in turnover differential. We saw what happened when they don't turn you over on Thursday night. The other thing here is, and I I'm going to say this. I wasn't going to put this out there, but my guys dug this up for me, so I'm not going to take credit for this. Bills are dead last in first quarter scoring, averaging less than a point in the first quarter of games this season. The Saints averaging 5.8 points in the first quarter this year. And my guys, when they dug this up, wanted to use the least exaggerated example for this. They ran back the last 14 years of team scoring first, only a field goal. It obviously is much higher if you score a touchdown first. So 3-0. Teams that go up 3-0 win the game 58% of the time. Obviously, again, higher with a touchdown, but this is the least exaggerated example. So we all look at the turnover differential. We're all looking at yards per play differential. That's all bad. This is another thing that just lets us know the Buffalo Bills aren't very good and they're defying odds.
The numbers ultimately catch up to you. And the Bills, as you mentioned, not only net yards per play, but they've been outgained in every single game this season, except their opener. Oh, wow. Meanwhile, the Saints have outgained every single opponent during this win streak. So we'll see what continues this weekend in Orchard Park, New York. Into the late afternoon games, where we get to see the Dallas Cowboys on display yet again, this time on the road in Atlanta, where the Falcons, we'll call them a soft 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, 2.5 minus, you know, a quarter, over under here at 50.5. Obviously, paying anyone who wants to bet this game, keeping close tabs on Ezekiel Elliott's status, knowing that he's rushed for 390 yards during this 3-game win streak. The other big concern for the Cowboys offensively has to be the ankle of Dez Bryant. I know I'm sure a lot of the fantasy players out there have made it to their waiver wire to pick up Terrence Williams and Cole Beasley in anticipation that Dez could be lost. You know, what do we think of these two teams right now, knowing that Atlanta's taking on water and Dallas starting to look like a real formidable opponent?
Man, this feels like a good spot for Atlanta.
I mean, I think that this has to be like, I don't want to call it a last stand, but you play 3 games on the road. You kind of, you know, fall apart against Carolina after building a 10-0 lead. If Atlanta doesn't play their best football game here, I don't know when they ever will. That being said, I thought they would play their best football game with revenge against the Patriots, and they laid an absolute egg in that spot too.
They did. They did. Now, you know, it is 3 games in 3 weeks on the road, but, you know, let's kind of preference that a little bit. They were home last week during the week. That the travel from Carolina to Atlanta, not all that big, right? You could eat lunch in Atlanta. I could probably smell, if you passed gas, what you had for lunch if I was in Carolina. So it's not that significant of travel where it's like, hey, they stayed out, you know, in this different coast for the last 3 weeks. So let's throw that out there.
Thank you for the geography lesson, Carmen San Diego.
There's a lot of people that, you know, they get so tied up. It's like three road games in 3 weeks. And then, you know, we've had certain situations where, like, the 49ers, 3 road games in 3 weeks. That's big, because they stayed out on the East Coast for 3 straight weeks. And then when they came home, we saw the collapse against the Cowboys, and someone made fun of me on Twitter for saying, using the phrase, making love, but like, they've been home. So it's not like, you know, they got to go
softer pain insider in 2017.
Right. So this isn't like a situation where they've been in like another, you know, time zone for 3 weeks. Like, they've spent time with the family, you know, they're all the family stuff's been taken care of. The math guys here, like, you know, it's so tough. This is the toughest team for me to gauge because, again, still number one, the Falcons, in adjusted net yards per play. They're having issues punching it in the end zone when they get inside the red zone. 51% year-to-date touchdown rate. 41% the last 3 games. So it's getting worse in terms of punching it in for 7 when you get in the red zone. And just again, for comparison's sake, a season ago under Kyle Shanahan, the Falcons scored touchdowns on 65% of their trips inside the red zone. So that's really where this team is slacking. And the defense that we know isn't a great unit is struggling because the offense isn't getting out to these huge leads. That was the biggest part of this Atlanta offense. They would get out in the first half to these big leads. It would force the opposing offenses to be one-dimensional, and that is always going to make a defense better. That's been the biggest problem. Now that we see these games are tight and they're close, the opposing team can run the ball. And what have we found out? Atlanta has trouble stopping the run. They're allowing 49% of runs to great successful. If Ezekiel Elliott is a go, and we're not sure if he is at this point, I think 1 o'clock this afternoon is the hearing. We'll find out more then. But if he's a go, it creates this matchup situation that could give the Falcons trouble. And I can see why people are a little hesitant to back Atlanta here, but this is going to be their season. This is it right here, right? if they're going to turn this thing around, it's got to be right here. I know Julio Jones sat out practice this week dealing with an ankle injury. I would think he gives it a go. The other thing here is, what does this line look like if Atlanta wins last week? And I know, you know, they're outplayed for large stretches of that game, but at the end of the day, Julio Jones was in an empty gymnasium and just blew a wide open layup. So what does this look like? Is it doom and gloom for Atlanta if Julio Jones, the best receiver in football, makes a play he makes 1,000 out of 1,000 times? What does this market look like? Are we doom and gloom on Atlanta here?
You're probably talking about, you know, 3.5 there. I mean, the lookout line pretty consistent with the market showing right now, but I think the narrative surrounding the Falcons is much, much different. Getting that win in the division, so much was made about their schedule and the quirks, the fact that they hadn't played an NFC South opponent until November. You start 1-0, all of a sudden things are starting to look a little bit better, and you can take kind of that glass half full mentality instead of now, like you said, the doom and gloom prognosis that we've seen and that drop from Julio Jones in the end zone more or less circulated on loop.
Where does this go? If Zeke is officially playing this week, we're already at soft 3, we're at some 2.5. Does this go down to 1.5?
I think this number comes off of the 3 for sure. And I think, yeah, it goes into kind of no man's land territory. And then you might try to see a little bit of a different appetite if professionals wanted to gobble up the Falcons at a cheaper money line price.
That makes sense.
So that's kind of my take there. And when you look at one last thing on this game, the Cowboys defensively, have you seen enough to start to believe in that this team looks that much better? We know how much is predicated on Zeke running the football effectively, and it's no coincidence. He puts together his best games. That defense looks better. But man, I'll tell you one thing. There may not be a player that doesn't get enough credit as far as casual fans are concerned in terms of what he means to a defense than what Sean Lee does for the Cowboys.
Absolute horse. And if you remember us talking about games earlier on in the season, when Sean Lee was going to miss that Rams game, there's a reason that line, there's a number of reasons why that line went down. But when you see that precipitous of a drop, like there's a reason some guys are worth more. He gets everybody lined up. He provides this confidence to everybody. Fantastic game this past week. But again, we touched on Monday's podcast. The Chiefs only had 3 possessions that mattered in the second half of that game because Zeke kept picking up first downs. That offense kept moving it methodically up the field. So you had the Chiefs. They got the momentum score before half. They get the ball to start the half. So that was one possession. They only had 3 total possessions. They got it back with like a minute 40, I believe, in the fourth quarter. They were down double digits at that point. So
yeah, you know, that game was over. 2017
at that point. Game was over. So that's how good, you know, it does help the defense. Statistically, you're still looking at a defense right now. They can get after the quarterback. That's the other thing. If the Cowboys can get out to a lead, they have a decent little pass rush. The problem is in these tighter games, you can run on them. Dallas 30th in the league. They allow 52% of runs to great successful. The secondary is young. It is getting a touch better, but not much. 25th in that regard in passing success rate defense. They allow 47% of passes to great successful. So it's not a great defense by any stretch, but Sean Lee at least makes them competitive. And they're just not getting completely outdone. That's the other big thing, though, right? So if you're undermanned or if you're not very good, it gets even worse when you're worn down. So when you're 3 possessions total in the second half, you can go balls to the freaking wall for those 3 possessions. And, you know, it's going to help things, certainly.
And you look at Dallas's upcoming schedule after this road tilt against Atlanta. 3 straight games at home that will really define their season. And maybe you can put them right there vying for I don't think they're going to catch the Eagles in the division, so maybe that top wild card with home games against the Eagles, Chargers, and Redskins before things get more difficult to close it out. From the Sunday afternoon primetime slot to Sunday evening, where bookmakers from here to Timbuktu will all be rooting for the home underdog, Denver Broncos, who enter this game as a 7.5-point home pup to the New England Patriots. Total on this game, 46.5. Got to go back 210 games, Payne, to find the last time Denver has been more than a touchdown underdog at home. We'll call it the Brock Osweiler effect. This defense has to be better. I'm just not sure it's going to be enough to slow down the Patriots and keep them competitive for 4 quarters.
You would hope the defense is going to be more competitive. They have been better in a yards per play dichotomy, home and away, so that helps some things. When I think about last week a little bit more, and when I think about in general, and we mentioned this on Monday's podcast, and I think we mentioned it when we broke that game down a little bit last week, is there something that makes you happy here? Like if you're the Denver defense, right? You go from Simeon, and you're like, oh, this guy's turn the ball over. He's the reason we're not winning games. And then the alternative is Brock Osweiler. Like, is that something that's going to make you get a little happy below the belt? Like, all of a sudden, like, hey, Osweiler's the saving grace here. Like, he's going to be the guy. I just don't know if there's going to be a ton of pep in the step. We didn't see it last week. Listen, I can't be on the Patriots here. It's a matter of if we're going to be.
We knew
on
that before we were breaking this game down. We weren't expecting you to pick the Patriots in this spot and lay 7.5 on the highway.
I'm just not sure if I can get there with Denver. This would feel like an all-in effort, basically, after quitting last week. They are getting some weapons healthier outside. I just don't know if the Broncos believe they have a quarterback. So this is a game where if that offense can somehow get out, even 3-0, and just give this defense a reason to play, they're going to have a shot here. One thing that Osweiler will have a chance at, New England only has 8 sacks on the season. They announced 2 guys out. McClellan's officially out now. Dante Hightower officially out again for the season. So you're now without 2 key cogs on defense. Osweiler should have no reason to throw the ball into these ridiculous coverages where it's like 1 receiver, 3 defensive backs. If you put on the old 22, it's the wildest thing you have ever seen. Like, Osweiler rarely takes chances. He is Mr. Dink and Dunk. Like, everyone talks about me saying Dink and Dunk. If I was to hand out the Dink and Dunk award, it would be Osweiler gets it. But the handful of times.
We can do that later in the season if you want.
But the handful of times he does throw deep, it's like he's colorblind. Like, I'm all for having confidence in your receivers, but if the Eagles had a better secondary, he throws 4 or 5 picks last week. And that's what you can't have happen here. You can't force your defense to play 40 minutes in a game. That's the kind of stuff that's going to have them just kind of throughout the season. Offensively, they got to get the ground game going. I think you mentioned a little bit on Monday, more Booker, hopefully. CJ Anderson, if you've been charting that, less snaps the last few weeks, less carries the last few weeks. They're going to try to make a little more concerted effort getting Devontae Booker the ball. That should help a little bit. The other thing is, I'm not pounding the table here for Jamal Charles, but he's still got a little speed to get outside. Let's line him up in the slot. Let's try to throw him a quick pass. Let's throw him a quick screen. Let's see if he can do some things to help Brock Osweiler. That's an added element that they're not using enough, I don't believe.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you one
thing. Total's got to come down.
What'd you say?
Total's got to come down.
You would think. I mean, you would definitely think at 46, and these two teams, no strangers to one another. I mean, they played every season since 2011 and met quite a few times in games that meant a little bit more than regular season matchups as well. One thing to keep in mind when you look at the Patriots, Tom Brady in his career off a bye, or at least a 13-game sample size, 10-3 straight up, but a modest 6-6-1 against the number. So not anything to...
That defense has had some success against him in years past.
They have, and I think that may be the one thing that if you're the Broncos defense, you know that like you have the biggest, baddest defending Super Bowl champs rolling into your building. If you're going to rally around something, but you're exactly right. If they start slow and New England's able to get out to a lead or the Denver offense turns it over, creating a short field, I mean, this thing has the potential to snowball pretty quickly.
That's the problem with some of these games when you bet them pregame, right? This game is reliant on Denver getting out, getting that first score, giving their defense a reason to play. Because if New England gets out 7-0 and Brock Osweiler's forced to play catch up.
Brock did lead a famous comeback on Sunday Night Football in the snow against New England, battling back down double digits in the fourth quarter. But
I just remember CJ Anderson's long run in that game.
Whatever it takes. Don't get in the way of the story when we cashed a ticket on that game.
He did connect a deep ball to Emmanuel Sanders, which was nice. I still envision Emmanuel Sanders like sliding across the snow.
That's what it takes. You need a little bit of snow angel, a little bit of snow magic sometimes to get the cash when the whole bookmaking world will be rooting for the Denver Broncos. And they'd love nothing more than an outright win to blow up money lines and teasers and all of those good exotic wagers. But that's only one man's opinion. There is a man who's going to know which games the house is going to need, and we'll go to him right now.
He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, we had you on yesterday. You said college football has been good. I have to imagine it's a complete 180 in the National Football League over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Favorite's been covering, huh?
I'd say it's a little bit chalky. I think 26-11-1 or something close to that. Not exactly an ideal scenario to be in.
Yeah, right. The last week, I mean, you know, something. It wasn't really. it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Let's put it that way. Thursday night we won big. Sunday, we lost, but I thought it was going to be a lot worse.
That Redskins game had to be huge for you guys to blow up money line parlays and teaser liability with Kirk Cousins marching the length of the field, I'd have to imagine, no?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. That was one of our biggest wins. We had, Jets, Skins, and Panthers were all big wins for the house. But, I mean, the Rams was a massive loss for us. That was huge. Eagles was a big win for the players as well. Jaguars, again. I mean, that's – Jaguars are – public team now. It's interesting. Every week, Saints was big for the players, and of course Monday night was a we took it up the tailpipe there. That was everybody on the line. we needed Green Bay for our nuts in it.
I was gonna say I can't imagine the pass interference with the always popular untimed down to put that game over the total really helped apply a tourniquet to a leg that may have needed to be amputated.
Yeah, exactly. That just killed us off, so whatever. On to next week.
Or this week.
Here we are, this week. Well, present. What is this, week 10?
I don't know. It all blends together. Who the fucking knows?
We're off the rails here. We were talking about Rachel Ray before we actually got on this podcast somehow. So back to things that matter. Week 10, talk to us about liability, whether public or sharp.
Okay, let's start off with a little sharp stuff. Giants -1, that's now -2.5 for that great game we're all waiting to see on Sunday against San Fran. Chargers +4.5, that's +3.5 right now. And the Skins +2, that's currently +1. So those are some of the sharper sides that got hit. Public, all sorts of sweats coming up. Oh my goodness, look at this. Starting tonight, Seahawks. 79% of the bettors are on the Seahawks. Jaguars, like I said, they're a public team now. 67% of the action's on the Jaguars. Jets, 88% of the bettors are on the Jets. Saints, they're getting hit every week by the public now. 69% of the action's on the Saints. Rams, again, 76% on the Rams. The Cowboys, 85% of the bets on the Cowboys at the Falcons. Giants, not only are sharps on the Giants, but the public as well. 70% of the bettors are on the Giants. And that Patriots-Broncos, I mean, this is going to be massive because not only are 88% of the early bettors on the Patriots, but that's the Sunday night game, and it already has the most bets on the Patriots than any other team. Usually Thursday, besides the Thursday night game, a 1 o'clock game has the most bets because the guys are betting their money on the early games. But no, the Patriots have more bets than any other team so far on Sunday. So I can only imagine what that's going to be like Sunday night.
Well, Dave, rest assured, we're going to blow up the first leg of that Georgia Bulldogs to New England Patriots parlay on Saturday, like we said yesterday. So you're not going to have that big a sweat. Payne, what a world we live in, though, where the Jets are getting 88% of the money as a road favorite. But, Dave, also on the Cowboys game, if you want to try and, lessen some of the liability there, just drop that Falcons money line down. I'm sure Payne and I would be more than happy to lay, $1.20 and $1.25, something like that.
Yeah, roger that. I'll speak to my guys afterwards. We'll do that right for you guys, sure.
I appreciate that. The Bet the Board listeners might as well. But for folks that are not already playing at betonline.ag, I'm not sure why they wouldn't be at this point in the season. What kind of promotions are available to the players looking to reload and those looking to get in on the fun, especially knowing you're going to have a full slate of college hoops available for them later today, too?
Yeah, that's right, man. The college hoops starts tomorrow. I can't wait. Big college hoops fan. I know you guys are, too. I can't wait to do a lot of college hoop podcasts in the future.
Jalen Brunson, preseason All-American for your Villanova Wildcats.
Why shouldn't he be, man? The guy's a stud. Anyways, 75% welcome bonus if you do not have a betonline.ag account. Get over there and sign up. Use promo code 75BTB for one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and you have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The max bonus is a dime on each, $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag let me start that one over again. promotions.betonline.ag/bet the board.
Here I was thinking you'd still be fresh from your vacation you took last week, Dave.
Yeah, here we go again.
That's Dave Mason. You can follow Jesus Christ. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason B-O-L. Dave, we'll be thinking of you when you're sweating out some of these big games on Sunday. Hopefully Saturday starts out the weekend the right way and we get dogs to start barking yet again, because I know one of our writers over at Bet the Board, Hook Slide, needs a few money line dogs to start cashing. Otherwise, he's going to be bankrupt himself.
Sounds good. Let's go dogs. Let's do it. Except the Georgia dogs. We don't want that.
Yeah, no Georgia Bulldogs around here. No Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, no. That's not the anti-dog there, but every other dog, let's go.
Dave pretty much told us what we needed to hear, Payne. Apparently, they're going to have a massive sweat on Sunday Night Football, as anticipated.
I think at this point, you probably are saying, hey, we'll take the cover. We won't be too greedy and ask for the outright here. But
greed is good. Gordon Gekko, greed is good.
Every teaser, every moneyline parlay is going to be tied into the good old Patriots this week.
Oh, you know it. You know it. This is going to be reminiscent of 2016, where every week the books had to root against the Patriots. And you just hope that you get that Herculean effort from Denver after they were embarrassed in Philadelphia. They come back and play like their hair's on fire.
Like their hair's on fire, baby.
But we still got a little work to do. We have our big game breakdown for Thursday Night Football, courtesy of the Sports Betting Coalition and the American Gaming Association, where nearly 6 in 10 Americans are in favor of ending the federal sports betting ban. 72% of avid sports fans have signed off on that. Nearly 2 in 3 Americans believe regulated sports betting allows local economies to benefit from tax revenue and job creation. The ASBC aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver. For more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com. And on top of that, we will have the CEO of the American Gaming Association, known Packer diehard, Jeff Freeman, with us Monday to talk about legalization efforts, everything they're doing, knowing that hopefully a PASPA repeal is in the future. So encourage folks to tune in for that as we talk about some relevant industry issues on top of breaking the games down. But Seahawks Cardinals tonight, Payne, or Thursday night, whenever the hell people listen. Arizona, a 6-point home underdog, and the total on this game has come down from where it opened at 43 to 40.5 now at betonline.ag. And I ask you this, who are the Seattle Seahawks? I mean, are we going to see the real Pete Carroll-led Seattle Seahawks step up at some point this season?
I don't know.
Very compelling, listen, answer. Thank you for that.
I mean, I'm sitting here with Super Bowl future on them. I would hope so. I know we always think that this is a team that comes on late and they can just flip the switch, and maybe that's the case, but it's week 10, time to flip.
Got to come sooner rather than later.
You would think. But the defense, I don't know. It just looks a little different. Offensively, it's tough to be consistent. When you don't have an offensive line, you can't run the ball. These things are starting to add up, and I'm just not quite sure what this team is, especially on the road. Ooh.
All right. Well, okay. I'm going to make it easier. If we don't know what the Seahawks are, do you know what the Cardinals are right now?
They're not a good football team. They're not a good football team. Now, I know they got back to 500 and you do all your reading. This is the last stand. This is hoorah. This is for that playoff push, baby.
By the Adrian Peterson Renaissance Tour.
Listen. Adrian Peterson, first ballot Hall of Famer. He wanted more touches. Bruce Arians doesn't have a starting quarterback. He has a solid defense. This is a match made in heaven for both Peterson and the Cardinals. Now at 32 years old, what's the recovery time look like on a short week after 39 touches?
I mean, that man's a specimen. So for like a normal human, it probably takes a lot longer. For Adrian Peterson, I feel like he wakes up Monday morning and he's ready to run the ball 40 more times.
There you go. I would think with Stanton back there and you're staring at, a Seattle defense that can be had on the ground, 22nd in rushing success rate defense, it's going to be a heavy dose of Adrian Peterson or whoever the heck else they have back there. It's got to be ground and pound. This is not going to be a very high scoring game, I wouldn't think. You can't have Stanton throw you out of it early. That's going to be the biggest thing here.
Don't be afraid to punt the football, Bruce Arians.
Right. The pace is what concerns me a little bit. Two teams that are faster than I thought, 7th and 8th in pace. probably shouldn't be saying this. One thing that we have seen with this Cardinals defense, they're a little bit different at home. That's basically all I can tell you there without divulging too much and not being back on this podcast Monday. It's just a completely different team at home, especially defensively. Seattle, let's see if they try to establish a ground game. You would think they're going to maybe try.
By ground game, you mean Russell Wilson carrying the ball 25 times?
Oh, man. What is going on with Rawls? I thought he was, man.
They're straight ahead downhill runners, and I think when you're not getting any push from your offensive line, you're seeing Fat Eddie Lacy, who I don't think should really
get done.
Carries in prominent situations
anymore.
Think
he's done.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I mean, like know, done. I don't think is he playing this. I think they basically are ending this Eddie Lacy experiment.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to continue. Thomas Rawls though hasn't looked like the same explosive back that we saw in the playoff game against the Lions. And clearly, this is a team that thought they'd identified their running back, whose name eludes me right now, the kid out of Oklahoma State. They got hurt earlier in the Chris Carson, who got hurt earlier in the year, and they're struggling to find an identity there. Now, to Russell Wilson's credit, he's probably doing as much behind a makeshift offensive line as Aaron Rodgers had to do early in the year with Green Bay. And so his improvisational skills have masked, again, some of their issues that they've had. He's got a talented core of receivers, you know, with Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson, Doug Baldwin, and Jimmy Graham. But at the same time, the thing that has plagued Seattle, and it's always been an issue, but you can kind of hide it when you have such talent superiority, these penalties. That's what did them in last weekend against Washington. You can't put yourself behind the sticks down in distance when you can't run the football and the whole world knows you're throwing the damn thing.
I like that. That was passionate. This is good. We're going to get you, dude. I'm going to play host next week. That was good. All right.
I mean, you just want me to go on rants? I mean, I'm happy to go on rants if you want.
You know, I agree. And I was digging into this a little bit earlier. By the metrics, the better part of the Seahawks offensive line is pass blocking. They're actually, you know, middle of the pack in adjusted sack rate. And so that's going to be a big thing here. Russell may have some time to throw. I know this Cardinals defense is damn good. You look at them, they're top seven in both passing and rushing defensive success rate, but they're having issues getting after the quarterback. 29th in adjusted sack rate, only 18 total sacks this season from the Cardinals. So maybe Russell will have a little bit more time than we think tonight. We'll see again. Cardinals are a completely different defense at home. The pace scares me a little bit. The pace scares me. Obviously, Stanton, throwing it a little bit scares me. And this is a short total. We've always talked about this. These short totals, it takes one defensive score, one special team score to bork the whole thing. And you could be potentially, you know, going under, 13 at this point in the first half?
Under 12, yeah. 12 and a half, the way this number's trending.
You know, there is some sharp money on this first half under. For me, you know, I agree it's the only way to look, but man, it gets tight. It gets tight when you, man, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. So, and it's just this number's tight. The pace scares me, Stanton scares me, but I'm sure it'll probably be a slow moving game. In terms,
we'll see what happens. I'm rooting for a 3-3 game going into the break. Let's put it that way.
There you go.
Rooting for a 3-3 game going into the break. All right. We've covered all the biggest games, including Bengals-Titans. We've talked to Dave Mason. We've gotten his take on exactly how poor things have been for the sports books as far as this recent run of favorites, cashing tickets with alarming regularity the last few weeks. We let our listeners down. Both you and I kind of texted each other as soon as that punt was returned and went, the Bucks are dead in the water, and it's 9-3. Don't think we're getting over the hump here. Do we have something to get us back in the win column, restore some of that consumer confidence in our NFL product, Mr. Payne Insider?
I didn't know consumer confidence was low.
I mean, consumer confidence for me is low because I look at it, I hold us to a higher standard. We lose one game. For me, that's like a losing streak.
Oh, I got you.
So we're 1-1 our last two, but we lost our last one. So, you know, we have to be 2-1.
Last week was a good week for Bet the Board listeners or followers, I felt like. No?
I mean, from our game analysis, yeah, our straight-out investment where we, like, prepare the meal and we serve it, that one didn't go so well.
Gotcha. South Carolina won.
Yeah, South Carolina got there. So 1-1 overall.
Been banging the hammer advertising it. Check out our Vegas top 10 every week. So South Carolina was in there. We also had our very first UFC article on the site. Very first one ever that grazed the Bet the Board website. That had TJ
plus 170 winner.
TJ Dillashaw by knockout in the second round, plus 170. And last week, I know I collected from my man my nice Houston Astros championship winner, which was nice, which was given out on the baseball podcast. So overall, it was a good week for Bet the Board. Here we go here this week. Now, I want to give this game out, but we want to play it first half. And there's only one spot in the world that has a first half open. So we like one side. You're probably not going to like it. It's ugly.
They're not going to like it.
There's the tease. But we got to wait till the first half market opens because it's right around a key number. And I'm not going to give it out if it's not a key number. And I don't want to be asked, what do I play it at six? I play it at 6.5. So let's wait. Let's wait till the rest of the market opens. As soon as it opens, so you might not even have to wait till Sunday. But maybe we'll wait till Sunday. We'll see how this market develops. But once the first half market opens, we may put it out earlier on the website than that. So check the website. It'll be up there at some point.
You're going to have people clicking on the site starting like, you know, Thursday afternoon around 3 o'clock.
Listen, this is a little different, right? Like, I get that we all want to just find free money on the ground, but...
Wait, we don't?
We got, you know, I mean, there's got to be a little work involved here, just a little bit. And I'm not sure I want to go full game because I don't trust the full game. but once the first half market opens... We'll probably dabble that, or maybe I'll have a change of heart and we'll go full game. We'll see what happens. But check the website. The NFL selection will be there.
Yeah, maybe if we're feeling generous, we'll tweet out that the website is updated. Yeah, there
you go. Man.
Yep. So follow Bet the Board Pod. Yeah, we'll do that for you because I know a lot of folks were asking in our timelines about college football. We never actually had a game that met our criteria aside from what we gave out in the column.
Well, we did. It just moved too much. The work ended up getting crushed before it could get sent out.
Yeah, and it didn't get to the window anyways.
It did not get to the window. That 14 did not matter.
No, it didn't matter. You could have never mind. I digress. But yeah, we'll send out a tweet when that is updated. And like we said, you should be following up at the Board Pod anyways on Twitter. So that way you guys don't have to continue to click, refresh, etc. But check out some of the content, as Payne alluded to. Some great articles up there. Self-help tools to make you better sports bettors. And Payne... I know it's always bittersweet. We close up shop for a week. We finish the third podcast of the trio. I mean, do you have any life advice? Do you have any wisdom you'd like to impart on our loyal audience before you say goodbye to them?
Hopefully underdogs start winning again. I know that's – we had a good article up this week, and you mentioned – what was the number against the spread? What are underdogs? Do you have that off the top of your head?
I think 26-11-1 or something like that. 26-11-2 over the – or that's favorites over the last 3 weeks. Yeah. It's been a good time to beat and chalk.
So whatever the reverse of that would be for dogs, yeah.
I can't do math in my head. It hurts.
So the other thing is, you know, we're betting our underdogs. We're usually taking a nice little piece, little nibble on the money line. And that's been even worse. Underdogs have just won the game 17% of the time in the last 3 weeks. We had a good article up on the website regarding those underdogs this week, along with some, I know a lot of people have a tough time dealing with implied odds and true odds. So there's a good piece up on differentiating the two of those and how to calculate both. So there's a lot of content going up on the Bet the Board website now.
Try and keep people busy and entertained. All right, we've done enough rambling. We're closing up shop here. So for Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow Dave Mason, who joins us every Wednesday and Thursday at Dave Mason BOL. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And of course, at Bet the Board Pod, where we'll have our NFL investment as soon as the market opens up. Best of luck should you choose to invest in Thursday night football between Seattle and Arizona, or any games you go out on a limb and play yourself on Sunday. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.